Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Nut Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. And the Mishnah says, Hishila chalukah lenachrit, or the nida. A woman lent out her beged or tunic to a non-Jewish woman or to a woman who is a nida. Harizo tola ba. Then this woman can be tola, a ketem, a stain that she finds in the beged on the other woman. As we're going to see in the Gemara, that you can do this where you have no detrimental effect on the other party. So you have here a ketem, which is a safek, as to whether it even is tumat nida. And then on top of that, it's a safek as to which woman is affected by the ketem. Two women wore this tunic. One of the two women was the cause of this ketem. So we have to assign, in a sense, liability to one of the two women to make them tmeim. So over here, you have two women, a nachrit and a nida, who already are tmeim. And so therefore, assigning the liability to them has no detrimental effect on them. The nachrit, the fact that she is tmeah, or that she has a tumat nida, which doesn't really exist midah, right? The only midah rabbanan, has no bearing on the woman, and therefore the other woman who lent her the tunic and now has it back and now has a stain on, can say, look, it was hers, and therefore I am tehora. Similarly, if she lent it to a nida is someone who's already tmeah, and we'll see in the Gemara more about the nida, but if she's already tmeah, assigning the ketem to her has no detrimental effect on her, because she's already a nida. But it does protect the woman who is now wearing it, and makes her tohora. So there we allow you to be toleba, we allow you to assume that the ketem belongs to the woman, who will not have any negative effect upon. Gimel nashim shlabshu chaluk echad. If three women who wore the same tunic, or they sat on the same bench, and then you find dam either on the tunic or on the bench, kulam tmeot. In that case, all of them are considered to be tmeot. Over here, you have to assign the liability to one of the women. No one of the women is any more likely to be the source of this, and therefore you can't say one of them is tmeah and the others are tohorim. You also can't say that all of them are tehorim, because it's clear here that one of them was the cause of this, either dam on the safsal or the ketem that's on the chaluk. And therefore we make them misafek, all tmeim, in order to be fair about this. Otherwise, the other women will benefit at the expense of one woman who is going to be made tmeah. Yashvu al safsal shel even, al itzteba shel merchatz. If they all had sat on a bench that was made of stone, in applying that the bench before that they sat on was made of wood, this one, if they sat on a bench of stone, or the pillars or stones that they had in the bathhouse that protruded, that allowed people to sit on, then Reb Nechemia Mitaher, the same Reb Nechemia we just saw back on Daf Nun Chet, says that they are Tehorim, Sheayat, Reb Nechemia Omer, Kol Davar, Sheinu Mikabel Tuma, Enu Mikabel Ktamim. Any object which is not Mikabel Tuma, also is not subject to the din of tamim, which is the way that we paskin. The Baal HaYad Tosafot back on Nun Chet explained that the reasoning or the logic behind Reb Nechemia is that if the object upon which the dam is found is not tamay, then we're okay saying that the woman is also not tameyah, because there's no inconsistency there. But if you find a ketem on an object that is mikabel tuma, then the object is tamay. Now, if the object's tamei, it would be incongruent to say that the object's tamei and the woman is tehora. In that case, we say the woman is tameah. So that's why a ketem that's on something that's mikabel tuma does have impact on the woman. A ketem that's on something that's not mikabel tuma does not have an impact on the woman. Amarav binachrit haroa. When we're speaking about this non-Jewish woman over here, we're speaking about a woman who already had a sighting of nida. Mimai, how do you know that that's the case? How do you know that she has reached the age where she is already menstruating? Dumia dinida. Because when it says there are two examples brought in the mission, there's a nachrit and a nida. Ma nida de kachazio. Just like when you're speaking about a nida, you're speaking about a woman who's menstruating. Af nachrit de kachazio. So too, by a non-Jewish woman, we're speaking about someone who is already menstruating. Amrav sheshet, kinayim v'shochiv rav. When Rav was dozing off, Amra lahashmaitita. He said this over, meaning that he wasn't thinking clearly when he made this comment, because Titania, we have a braita, tola v'nachrit. A person can assign the liability of the ketem to a nachrit. Rabbi Meir Omer v'nachrit haruya lirot. And Rabbi Meir says that it's with a non-Jewish woman who has reached the age or the time period where we'd expect her to menstruate. Va'afilu Rabbi Meir lo kamar el biruya lirot. Rabbi Meir, who seemingly in the bright right now, is the one who's being machmir, he only requires that she be re'uya lirot, that she actually have the capacity to see dam, avora'ah lo itzrith. But actually citing dam, we don't need. Rav's statement seems to indicate that she's already an of-age woman who has menstruated, and that's who we can be tolai in. Over here, what Rav Sheshit points out is that we have a braita where Rabbi Meir says that at most she needs to be able to see, or be at the age where she normally would see, but not that she's demonstrated that she's menstruated already, not that she's actually had the menstruation yet. And even the Tanakama, who seemingly now is the Kula, all he says is Tola ben Achrit, making it sound like you don't need any evidence of anything, you can be Tola in the Achrit. The Gemara says, Amarava b'tizvira, is your explanation of the bright really foul the bumbo? Because Rabbi Meir the Chumra, you're assuming that Rabbi Meir is the Chumra, Rabbi Meir the Kula, because Rabbi Meir is actually the Kula here. The Tanya, you have another bright, and not Tola ben Achrit. The Tanakama actually says you cannot use a Nachrit. Rabbi Meir Omer Tola. And Rabbi Meir says you are able to be Tola Nachrit. Halakashahach. And how are you going to reconcile between these two Braitot? You had a Braita before where the Tanakama says Tola, and a Braita here where the Tanakama says Eno Tola. And then we have two Braitot where Rabbi Meir says Tola, and in one of them he says that it's a case where she is Uya Lirot. Now, Tarizachi, the way to reconcile between them is, he shiro'ah. That's only if she is citing, has reached the point of menstruating already. Rabbi Meir Omer, bi'ri'uya lirot. Even if she hasn't demonstrated that she's menstruating yet, but if she has reached the age where she would menstruate, afu pishenu ro'ah, even though she's not actually menstruating. So the way to reconcile between the braitot is to say, the braitot that says, the Tanakama says, eina tola, that's in a case where she hasn't yet cited dam. She has yet to have a menstruation. So in that case, the Tanakhama says you cannot be tola on that nachrit. The other hand, Rabbi Meir says, as long as she's at the age where she could menstruate, that's enough to be tola in her. The previous braita that said tola binachrit is a case where she already saw, where she already had menstruated. And Rabbi Meir says, you don't need that. You don't need to already have menstruated. It's enough that she's reached the age where she could menstruate, and then you can be tola in her. Now, what it seems like from the differentiation that's made here in the Gemara, both from what we've seen here and the contrast to the Mishnah, you have two women in the Mishnah. You have a Nachrit and you have a Nida. From the Nachrit, it makes it sound like she does not need to actually be menstruating at the time that she borrowed the tunic. It's either that she has menstruated already, that would be the view of the Tanakhama, or that she had the potential to menstruate, which would be the view of Rabbi Meir. The fact that she actually has to menstruate, to actually be in the middle of her menstruating, that is not necessary in order to be tola in the Nachrit. Then in the Nida, you would have possibly contrasted that and said, that's speaking about a Yisraelit, and if she's deemed to be a Nida, that means that she must be having a sighting. It's not enough that she is simply at the age where she's menstruating, or she has menstruated, she needs to be a Nida in order for it to not to be a negative for her to be classified as the source of the Ketem. In that way, you would distinguish between a Nachrit and a Nida, whereby the Nachrit doesn't actually have to be a Nida. There are all those that disagree with that conclusion and say even the Nachrit would have to be during the time that she's menstruating. But from the discussion in the Gemara, it does not sound like that. It sounds like the Nachrit over here just needs the potential, not in actuality, in order to assign liability to her. Right. Tanu Rabbanan. Tola b'shomeret yom keneged yom b'sheni shala u'b'soferet shiva shelo tavla v'fika achi mitukenet v'chaverata mikulkelet divrei Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. So you have a woman who is a zavaktana, which means that she had a sighting of dam on one of her 11 days of Yimei Ziva, and then she has the next day, the second day, where she has to keep it b'tara. On that second day, she goes to the mikveh. When the sun sets on the second day, if she has no additional sighting, then she is tehora. It's a shomeret yom, keneged yom. She had one day of sighting. Tzikit one day, Bitahara. You also have Soferet Shiva, which is a Zavak Dola, a woman who saw 3 days in a row during her 11 days of Yemei Ziva. She has to keep Shiva Nikim in order to become Torah. And then during the time of Beit Mikdash, she has to bring a Korban after that. So those Shiva Nikim are kept after she was already Tmeah. Now she's trying to remove the Tum'ah. What Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says is, even though over here, this woman, if we assign the Ketim to her, it will be detrimental to her. That is because if she's Shomer Yom Keneged Yom, she was Tmeah yesterday. Today, she needs to keep a day of Nikiyut, being clear of any sighting, in order to become Torah. She goes to the mikvah in the morning. She will be Torah, is assumed to be Torah, unless she has a sighting that undermines that. So now, if we assign the Ketim to her on the second day, she now will have to wait an additional day. She'll have to wait a Shomer Yom Keneged Yom on a third day, because we said for 1 day of sighting or 2 days of sighting, you just wait the next day, Bitara. If we assume on the second day of her Shomer Yom Keneged Yom, she was the source of the Ketem, that will actually make it. She'll have to wait another day, because it ruined this day, and now she'll have to wait the subsequent day. During her Shiva Nikim, if we assign the Ketem to her, it will undermine her Shiva Nikim, and she'll have to restart her Shiva Nikim. Despite that detriment to the woman, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel assigns the Ketem to her and leaves the woman who is Tehora the Gamre to say that she did not see the Ketem, it belonged to the other woman. The reason Rashi says that we say that is because over here this is a woman who has Cheskat Tuma. She already has a Chazoka of a Mayan Patuach, of already having Dam or having a sighting of Dam, which puts her in a more precarious position in terms of our assumptions of what's going to happen next. A woman who's Torah Legamre, there's no expectation that she's going to have a sighting at this point in time. A woman has already had a sighting. The likelihood for her to have another sighting is a much higher probability and a much higher likelihood. So because of that, we assign the liability to that woman. In essence, the principle is that in Dinei Derabbanan, which Ketem is a Din Derabbanan, we generally have a principle that we put together the Mikukal b'mikukelet. We assign the problem to the person who's already problematic. And therefore, over here, the woman who is the Shomer Yom Keneged Yom is considered to be the Mikukelet. But that may not be enough because, again, as we said, the Yemei Ziva are considered to be Musulekat Damim. So the Rashi adds on top of that, that once she has a sighting of Dam, Mayana Patuach, then already she's already begun to almost undermine, in a sense, part of that Chazaka, or to indicate that maybe she isn't Misulekat Damim, and that's why she's considered to be the Mikul Kelet, even though she's during her Yemei Ziva, which should generally deem her to be Misulekat Damim. Rabbi Omer, Eino Tola. Rabbi says you can't do that. Fikach, Shtehem Mikul Kalot. Both of them have a problem now. Rabbi says, this woman, yes, yesterday, on the first day when she had a sighting, she was Tmeah, and she had a Cheskat Damim. Today, our assumption, especially during the Yemei Ziva, is that this woman is a Misulekat Damim. So a woman who doesn't normally see Dam. This is not a period of time where you would expect her to see Dam. Therefore, we can't assign that liability to her because it's to her detriment. And it's a time period where we assume that she is Torah. She could have gone to the mikveh already on that day when the Ketem now becomes an issue. And we're going to say now that she's Tmeah, that she's cited again. That's not the general standing or approach that we assume that a woman who has had a sighting the day before, that we're going to assume automatically she has a sighting the next day. Or a woman is already keeping her Shiva Nikim. Could be that she's 4 days, 5 days into counting her Shiva Nikim just because she had a sighting a while back, 3 days in a row. We're going to assume now that this sighting also belongs to her. She's already had a number of days where she had no sighting. Why should we assign that liability to her? Therefore, we don't have anybody assigned to Ketem to. They're both equally plausible sources for this Ketem. And since we can't assign it to one over the other, they are both Tmeim in this situation. And they're both what we call Mikul Kalot. They're both now in a bind because they both will have Tuma assigned to them. Shavin, and both Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon Galil agree, Shatola b'shomer yom keneged yom b'rishon shela. And a shomer yom keneged yom on her first day, then we definitely would assign that liability to her. Because if you see multiple times on a single day, whether you're a nida, or whether you're shomer yom keneged yom, on the first day, it doesn't change the amount of tumah that you have. Even if a woman sees three times in a row on a particular day, that's not going to change the fact that all she has to do is wait the next day b'tahara. So if we assign the ketan to her on the first day when she had a sighting of dam, it's not detrimental to her. She'll be in the same exact position she was before. In that case, even Rabbi would agree, we assign the liability to the woman who is the Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom, because she's no more Tmeya than she was before, and the one who's Torah remains Torah in that case. Ubi Yoshevet al dam tohar, ubi betula shedameh tuhurim. Or in the other two situations in which assigning the dam to the woman is not detrimental to her. One of them is a woman who gave birth, and after she's gone through her Yemei Tumah, and now she's in her Yemei Tohar, so even though she is Tehora, we will assign the Ketem to her because her seeing a Ketem has no detrimental effect on her. Any sighting she has now is Tehora. Obviously, if she was Tmeah from Tumat Leida, then for sure we would assign it to her because she's already Tmeah. But even in during her days of Yemei Tohar, we would assign it to her, because any sighting during Yemei Tohar leaves her Tahor. And therefore there's nothing negative in assigning the liability to her. Or, now here it's a Betula woman who's had yet to have Biyah. So again there, if we assign that to this woman, we will assume that she is the source for it, because again, it has no detrimental effect on her, because even if she has a sighting of Dam now, we will not assume that it is Dam Nida. But rather, Dam Betulim. Lefikach, the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Lamali. Why does the Braita, when he quotes the position of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, quotes his position, and then says, Lefikach, therefore. Therefore is obvious. If you believe what he says, that you can assign the liability to these women, then of course, Lefikach, the outcome is the woman who was the one who had a problem already will now have a bigger problem, and the one who was Torah will remain Torah. The Mishum de Rabbi. It's just because of the parallel structure in Rabbi's statement. Lefikach de Rabbi Lomali. Well, then explain to me why you need the Lefikach of Rabbi. If Rabbi says you can't assign liability to the woman, then of course, both of them are then Tmeim. So then why do you have to tell me Lefikach? Therefore, both of them are Tmeim. Mal de Tema, I would have thought, Ha'i de Itzhtakach Ketem Gaba Tidkalkel. All right, so now he says you can't assign liability to any one of the two women. But I still have to decide who is responsible for this ketem. So a possible way to assign liability is not based on the woman who's already tmeah, but rather to assign it based on who has the beged currently. Whoever is in possession of the beged currently, we're going to assume the status quo is just like it's in your possession now. That's where the ketem was all along, and therefore you are the one responsible for the ketem. So again, we can't use the fact that this woman was tmeah, that she had a mayan patuach. But nevertheless, at least let's use the fact that she's in possession of the beged. So therefore, she will be mitzitkalkel. She will be ruined or messed up by this. Idach lo titkalkel. The other woman will leave without any liability. Kamash v'lan, Rabbi teaches us that his opinion is, even though you can't assign liability to any particular woman, we're still not going to then make a decision based on who is in possession of the beged. Rather, both of them are now going to be stuck with this liability, and therefore they're both going to be considered tmeot, and that's why Rabbi says lefikach, to dispel the other possibility of what you could have thought in his opinion. Amar Rav Chista, tamei v'tohor shalchu b'shnei shvilim. You have a person who is tamei, and a person that's tohor, that walked on two paths, echad tohor v'echad tamei. One of the paths is tamei, one of the paths is tohor. Banu, the machloket, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. This is the machloket we just saw between Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel as to whether we assign the liability to the person who is already problematic versus assign the liability to both parties. So the suggestion here of Rav Chista is that these cases are parallel. And over here we have a person who is tahor that might have walked down the tamei path, might have walked down the tahor path. And you also have a person who is tamei. They might have walked down the Tamei path, they might have walked down the Tohor path. So according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, we're going to assign the liability to the person who's already Tamei. So we're going to assume that the person who's Tamei walked down the path that was Tamei. We're going to assume that the person that was Tohor walked down the path that is Tohor, and that gives you the most beneficial outcome. The person's Tamei just remains Tamei, the person's Tohor stays Tohor. On the other hand, Rabbi, who believes that you can't assign that liability to the person that is Tamei, therefore, he's going to say they're both Tmeim over here. And even though in general we have a principle that Safek Tuma B'Shut HaRabim is Tahor, over here we do not invoke that principle because both of the parties are coming before us for a psak halacha, where we know for certain one of them is tameh. And therefore, it would be impossible to say that they both are tehorim when we know that one of them is tameh. Had they each individually come for us, there's a possibility that we would have been mitahir them. But now they're standing before us, and one of them is tameh. We can't say about both of them that they are tehorim. Or you have to say here that there is a pgiya in the chezkat tahara by the fact that one of these people is definitely tameh, and therefore that takes away the chezkat tahara that leads to the psak of Safek Tuma B'Rishut HaRabim is Tehora. Not like the Balei HaTosafot who suggest that there is a Chezkat Tahara over here. Or you have to say that En Ochanami Midoraita, there is Safek Tuma B'Rishut HaRabim here and it is Tahor. Nevertheless, Midrabanan, they assign Tuma here because it just doesn't look right to say that where we know one of the two guys is definitely Tameh, to say they are both Tehorim. Now, Mati Floravado. Vada says, how can you compare the cases? Adkan lo kamar rabi atam elotarvayu ki adodininu. Over there, by the case of the dam nida, the reason that Rabbi says they're both caught up in this problem of the ketem is because I have no more reason to believe that one of them is the source of the ketem than the other. They're both in a stage where they are tohrim. One woman doing her shmira for shomer yom keneged yom, or doing her shivinikim. The other woman who is tohra the gamre. There's no reason to believe that one over the other is the source, therefore I assign the liability to both of them. Hacha, my nafkalan mina. Over here, it's not true. The guy who's tameh is already tameh. Sending him down the path that is tameh, or assigning that liability to him, makes him no worse off than he was beforehand. It doesn't do anything to his detriment. Therefore, maybe Rabbi, in this case, would agree that you should not assign the liability to both of them, but rather to the person that is tameh. Mar says, Rav Chista, what is Rav Chista thinking then? This distinction is so obvious. What was Rav Chista thinking that these cases are parallel? Says, Sof Sof, Ihi Tvila Boya. In the end, she needs a Tvila. In the case of Shomeret Yom, Keneged Yom, or in the case of Shiv Nikiim, she needs to go to the mikveh still. And since she needs to go to the mikveh still, she is in a state of Tum'ah. Even though she's in a state of Tum'ah, we do not assign the liability to her, but rather we assign the liability to both of them. Rav Chista says, I think the case here by the Shvilim is the same, because the person who is Tameh is no different than the woman who's being Shomer Yom Keneged Yom, who has yet to go to the mikveh, or the woman who's camping her Shivnikim has yet to go to the mikveh. In both of those cases, they're also Tameim, and yet Rabbi's not willing to assign the liability to them. So too in our case, the person is Tameh, he's not going to be willing to assign the liability to this individual. Tosafot here discusses some of the fundamentals of the case, the first of which is the Tameh and the Tahor that walk down these paths. The person that's Tameh over here, he says, we're not speaking about a Tameh, Shlo Safar Klal. We're not speaking about a person who's Tameh that didn't start counting any days of Tahara. Whether that's if he has Tumat Tameh, he hasn't already started through his process of becoming Tahor. Is it Tumat Sheretz? He hasn't already gone through the Mikveh. Because then, even Rabbi would be modeh that you're toleh, because this person is clearly tameh, full-fledged tumah, and there's no reason to believe that we wouldn't assign the liability to him. In order to make it parallel to our case, it has to be a tameh shesafar ktzat, someone who's tameh mate, who already began his process of becoming tahor. If that's the case, then this tumah would be undermining to him, and that's why Rav Chista sees these cases as being parallel, because in the case of the Tumat Adam, then we're talking about Tumat that's already begun the process of becoming Tahor, even though the person remains Tameh. And then when we just said now, the parallel, according to Rav Chista, is by the case here, the woman has yet to go to the mikveh, and therefore she is Tameh, even though she's begun a process of becoming Torah. That's the first thing that makes Rav Chista's assumption a lot more plausible. Whereas Rav Ado believes that the loss of a couple days of the Shivanikim isn't as extreme as losing the entire Shivanikim or the day of the Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom. And that's why he believes in this case, Rabbi would agree that you can't assign liability to this woman. Now, based on this difference that the Tosafot posits between the Shivanikim and less than Shivanikim, why doesn't Rav Chista just make the case that he wants to demonstrate that Rabbi is still going to argue in as a case when it's less than the Shivnikim. It's 3 or 4 days of the Shivnikim. And he says the reason is because it's a bigger chiddush to tell us about the Shnei Shvilim, where it's Suffik Tuma B'Shut Rabim is Tahor, and yet he's saying that Rabbi still argues in that case. But the second thing he says is that why would you connect between a Ketem and a Shvil? Because by a Shvil you have Suffik Tuma B'Shut Rabim. When you have Suffik Tuma B'Shut Rabim, Sveiko Tahor. So there's more reason to lean towards saying you are Tahor than by the case of Tumat Tamim, whereby the person doesn't have any Chazoka or any Safek Peshut Rabim that you would say is Tahor. So Tosafot again here says more fundamentally, Esh lamar degabi ketem nami ikal meimar lo itra cheskata klal de ikal mitle bechaverta. Her cheskatara is not breached over here because of the fact that she can assign the liability to her friend. Since she can assign the liability to her friend, the citing of the ketem in of itself doesn't ruin her chazkat tahara. In that way, the cases again are equivalent. By the case of shvilim, sofek tumat b'shut rabim is tahor. That means that you remain with the chazkat tahara. Maybe that's why we would leave you be tahor in that case. But by a ketem, we wouldn't say that. Tosafot says that ketem is no different. The woman's chazkat tahara remains intact, even though there's a ketem here, because we can't directly correlate between the ketem and the woman. She can always say it was the other woman. Doing that keeps her cheskat tahara intact. And therefore, you can now keep the cases are really parallel. And that's what Rav Chisda is suggesting. That's the view of the Balei HaTosafot. Other Rishonim over here see the machloka between Rav Chisda and Rav Hada as revolving around what is the reasoning behind Rabbi's position. Is Rabbi's position based on that we are toleh v'kilkul v'mikukal? Or is the Rabbi's position premised on the fact that we have a Mayan Patuach here, we have Tumah that's flowing? And Rav Hada believes over here that Rabbi's position is premised on Tolin, it's a Kilkul by Mikulkal. Therefore, on the first day of Shomer Yom Keneged Yom, where she is Mikulkalet, you can be Toleh the Tumah on her. On the second day, where she has a Chezkat Tahara, you can't be Toleh the Kilkul by Mikulkalet, she's not viewed as a Mikulkalet. And therefore, in the case of Shnei Shvilim, just like we were toled the kilkul b'milkukal by the shomer yom keneged yom, we'll do the same thing here. And this guy's already tamei, so we may as well assign the tumah to him. And that's the view of Rav Hada. On the other hand, Rav Chisda, who believes on the second day she still has a cheskat tumah because she has yet to go to the mikveh, then that reasoning can't be because of tolin kilkul b'milkukalet, because then on the second day Rabbi would have agreed that we assigned the liability to her. So it must be that Rabbi's position is premised on Mayan Patuach, and that the reason that we assign the liability on the first day is because she is a source of Tumah right now. That only be true in the case of Shomer Yom Keneged Yom. But when you come to the case of Shnei Shvilim, that would not be the case because the guy is Tamei independent of having gone down this road. His Tumah from before has no correlation with the Tumah that we're trying to assign to him now. Therefore, Rabbi is going to disagree in this case as well and not assign that liability to the person who's already Tamei. Yidmar, I'm Rabbi Yossi v'Rabbi Chanina. Tamei v'tohor, v'afilu tohor v'talui. If you have someone who's definitely Tamei and someone who's tohor, or you have someone who's tohor and someone who's a safek if they're Tamei, she'alchu b'shnei shvilim, they walk down two paths, echad Tamei v'echad tohor. One of the paths is Tamei, one of the paths is tohor. Toleh Tamei v'talui, v'tohor v'tohor. You can't assign the liability, meaning going down the Tamei path, to the one who's already Safek Tamei, and you will assume that the Tahor walked down the path that was Tahor, L'divrei Hakol, according to everyone. This goes against Rav Chisda's position. Rav Chisda just said before that this two-path situation is the machloket between Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Here you have a Braita explicitly stating that both according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi, we would divide up the problem here and say the Tahor went down the Tahor path and the Tamei or the Safek Tuma went down the Tamei path. That undermines Rav Chisda and sounds exactly like what Rav Hada suggested before, that even Rabbi is going to agree in this case. Vamine Rabbi Yochanan me Rabbi Yehuda bar Levi. So Rabbi Yochanan queried of Rabbi Yehuda bar Levi the following question. Maulit lot ketem biketem. What if, can we assign liability for a ketem to a ketem? So in all the other cases that we've been discussing here, the woman was Tmeah because she actually had a sighting of Dam. She either was a Shomer Yom Keneged Yom, she had a sighting of Dam, she was a Nida, she had a sighting of Dam, she was a woman post-pregnancy that is Tmei Tohar, or a nachrit, all of these include a belief that there is real dam nida that was here, and therefore assigning liability to this woman of a keta makes sense. What happens if the woman who is tmeah here is not tmeah because she had a sighting of dam, but she also had a sighting of a ketem? And the ketem itself, the chachamim, are gozer on a ketem that you are tmeah. But that still leaves the possibility that's really a fake that you are tmeah. We just, because of the circumstantial evidence and the belief that it came from you, we assume that you are the source of that ketem, unless we can be tolied in something else. And we assume that you are tamei to matnida. So what happens if a woman has a sighting of a ketem that then renders her tamei because of that ketem? Now you have another ketem. After that happens, a woman lends out her begit to this woman who had seen a ketem, gets it back, wears it again, and then sees a ketem on it. Can she say now that belongs to the other woman because she has a ketem? She already was tamei because of her ketem? Or does it not work? It only works when she actually is a nida, because she had a sighting of dam. That's his question. Aliba de Rabbi Loti Bailach. According to Rabbi, it's not even a question. Hashta mahotam de kachazia migufa amart eno tola. In a case where she had a real sighting of dam, she menstruated, and yet Rabbi doesn't allow you to assign liability to that woman if she's already begun the process of becoming Torah. Hocha de me'almaka ate lo koshke. Here, where the fact that this woman is tmeah, you can say is only misafek, and there's a possibility that this stain, the original stain that made her tmeah, came from outside. It was an exogenous stain, and she really isn't a nida. Misafek, we say she is tmeah because that's the gzerah or takanat chachamim. But if you look at this in an objective manner, it's now possible that ketem came from somewhere else, or the ketem was hers. And then, now we're in a second level of safek, which is that you have a safek is whether the ketem came from the woman who's wearing it now, or came from this woman who had previously seen a ketem and it was lent to her. So we don't know which one it is. Rabbi's definitely not going to assign that liability to her, because in a case where we know for sure she had a sighting and she's already begun the process of dara, we don't assign the liability to her. Here where it's even a safek, whether she really is a nida, we're certainly not going to assign the liability to her in particular. Therefore, both women will be considered tmeot because of this. The question really only arises with regards to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Over there, where she's a for certain tmeah, because she had a sighting of dam that made her tmeah, even though now she's begun the process of being tahor, nevertheless, she has yet to become tahora, and therefore we're going to assign that liability to her because she was a full-fledged nida or tmeah at some point. Hacha de me'alma ka'ati lo talya, here where the ketem might have come from some outside cause, and therefore maybe we're not going to then assign liability to her. Odemaloshna, maybe it makes no difference, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, if you're tmeah because you had a sighting of dam, or you're tmeah because the chamim say you're tmeah because of a ketem, in either case, you're tmeah. And maybe I just would rather assign that liability to you because you already are tmeah. And the Ran, continuing his discussion from before, says that Rabbi Yochanan Safek in the sheet of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel is whether his position is premised on Tolin et akil kulbe mikul kelet, or is his position premised on Mayan Patuach. And the Nafkamina will be this case of Keptem, where there she is mikul kelet, so we could be Taloi the kil kulbe mikul kelet, but she is not a Mayan Patuach. She's not someone that is citing Tumah, because a Ketem is not an indication of a Mayan Patuach. Even though it makes her Tmeah, it doesn't necessarily mean that this woman is now a Mayan Patuach. Samalei ain't Tolin. So Rabbi Yehuda Bar Levi says back to Rabbi Yochanan, cannot be Tolek Ketem B'Ketem. Matam, what's the reason? The fish ain't Tolin, because we don't. So now that's a very difficult or cryptic statement as to the explanation for what he's saying is saying the same thing again. See over here in the Masorah Shas, he brings from the Oruch, the Perish, Kabbalahi kach libnei Adam. That's the way it is. That's the Masorah. That's the way it is. No questions asked. Not giving you there's no explanation for it. That's the Masorah that we have. That's the way the Halacha is. So that could be the statement. The statement is, it is because it is. There is no reasoning behind it. That's one possibility. On the other hand, Rashi over here tries to explain the logic as being the following. You cannot be toleh in that woman, because that woman does not have absolute tumah in her. Her tumah is only misafek, Because Chachamim said that if you have a Sadi Meketem, that even though it might have come from outside or come from you, we assume it came from you unless you have evidence to the contrary, unless you have something to be told up. So therefore, we don't assume just because she had a Ketem that the next Ketem is also sourced from her. There's no such Chazoka that if you have one Ketem, then you're going to have another Ketem, because the whole Ketem to start with was a Safek. And now to say place another Safek on top of this first Safek is not the way we go. And that's what Rashi means. Matam lefisha ain't tolin. The reason we don't do it is because there's no reason to assign liability to a woman as a Ketem, because her Ketem only made her an uncertain Tmeya and not a certain Tmeya. And so therefore you're not going to assume that the next Ketem necessarily was sourced from her. Eitve, ain't tolim Ketem beketem. Breita makes a statement like what Rabbi Yehuda Bar Levi said, that you're not tolea Ketem beketem. Yishilach haluka lenachrit, if she lent out her tunic to a non-Jewish woman, oli yoshevet ala Ketem, or for a woman who's already trying to become Torah, because she had a sighting of a Ketem, harizot tolaba, you can assign liability to her. So first of all, that's a problem for Rabbi Yehuda Bar Levi. Before we even get there, the bigger problem is that this is an internal stira. It's contradictory, the statements of the Breita. Agufa gashon. Reisha amaret ein tolin. Breita opens with the statement that you're not allowed to be tolea ketem beketem. Seifa amaret tolin. And then the Seifis say, well, if she's yoshevet to become Torah from a ketem, then you can assign liability to her. That makes it sound like you are tolea ketem beketem. Halo gasha. Harabi harib shimon gamaliel. Two parts of the Breita are authored by different opinions. A Breita that says, ain't olim ketem beketem is Rabbi, who says, not only are you ain't olim ketem beketem, ain't olim ketem be nida. And it's just a continuation of his position with regards to nida, is true by ketem. The part of the Breita that says, you can be tola, is similar to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said before, that you can assign liability to a woman who had a sighting, and now is becoming Torah during her Shiv Nikim or during her Shemet Yom Keneged Yom. So to a woman who is trying to become Torah from a Ketem, we'll say the same thing. First of all, that will be a problem for Rabbi Yehuda Bar Levi now, because now we're saying that according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, he believes that you can't be Tolea Ketem Beketem, as Rabbi Yehuda Bar Levi said otherwise. Igadamre, say Hava Rabbi. These are both authored by Rabbi. Hava Rishon Shalah B'Shenishla. Depends which day of her Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom. If it's on her first day, then you can assign liability to her. If it's on her second day, then you can't assign liability to her. Because on the first day, it has no detriment on her. On the second day, it does have a detriment on her. Rav Ashi Amar, Hava Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Both of these are authored by Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Velo Kasho. And it's not a problem. So why is there a difference in the din? Kan lemafreya, kan lahaba. One is retroactively, one is prospectively. Rashi over here explains that as being Lenyan Tumat Mafreya. We have this Dinder Abonon, that a woman who has a sighting of Dam, or over here a Ketem, we assume she was already Tmeya 24 hours prior to this, at least with regards to Tarot, because we assume that the blood that's exiting her body now already exited the uterus in an earlier period of time, and we assume that the maximum amount is 24 hours, like we saw earlier in the Masechta, that the lesser of 24 hours, the last time she checked, is the Tuma Lemafreya. So that Tuma Lemafreya, Rashi says, you can assign that liability to the woman who has a Ketem. And that is because the woman, by assigning her the Tuma retroactively, there is no downside. She was Tmeya. She has the problem of the Ketem. So assigning her Tuma retroactively is not to her detriment. On the other hand, assigning her Tuma prospectively is problematic, because then she now has ruined her either Shiva Nikim, or it has ruined her Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom, and it is to her detriment. And therefore, we will bifurcate the din and say, Tuma Lemafreya, we will assign to the woman who already had a sighting, or already had a Ketem. The Haba, then we will not, and then both of them will have a problem, because we can't assign it to one over the other, because it will be to the detriment of that woman. That's the way Rashi explains it. The Balei HaTosafot do not love this explanation of Rashi. Most of the reason is because how can you bifurcate the din? How can you say the Ketem belongs to you for this half and it belongs to the other woman for this half? It either is this woman's Ketem or it's the other woman's Ketem. It's not a shared Ketem in any way. So to bifurcate the Tumah makes no sense. And therefore he says, Mefaresh Ri, that the mafreya and the haba over here are not a reference to the tumah itself, but rather to the scenario. The question is, when did the safek arise? Do you have now a chaluk that was lent out to a woman and then returned to this owner, and the owner wore it, and then after the owner wore it, she sees a stain on it, and now we have uncertainty as to whether the stain came from the owner or the woman who had borrowed the tunic. Then afterwards, the woman who borrowed the tunic has a ketem, a sighting of a ketem. So now we have a safek, and after we have the safek, all of a sudden we get information that the woman who borrowed it now has a ketem. Or the other scenario could be in a case where the woman who borrowed it already had a ketem. Now she borrows it, wears it, hands it back to the owner wears it, and the owner finds a ketem on it. And again, we're not certain whether it came from the owner or the woman before. But the cases are different because it's a question of when the safek arose vis-a-vis the woman's already being tmeya, only afterwards being tmeya. And that's what he says here. Lima freya means that the ketem was already sighted before the safek arose. Since the ketem was there already before the safek arose, we can assign the liability of the ketem to the woman who already saw a ketem. On the other hand, if they have a safek, and then only afterwards does the woman have a sighting of a ketem, there it's lahaba, there we can't assign liability to the woman because at the time of the safek, she was no worse off than the other woman. They were both Torim at the time of the safek. It's only post the safek that she now has a negative associated with her that she saw ketem. That's all post that case. So that'll be the difference. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel will say, if she's already in the precarious position because she saw a ketem, then we're going to assign the liability to her, even though it's a ketem to a ketem. But in a case where she, at the time of the safek, was completely Torah, only afterwards did the problem arise for her, then we're not going to assign that to her. Since we didn't have that information or that knowledge at the time of the safek, we're not going to then assign the liability to her. But now the Gemara says, Mikol makom, kasho, which is what we said all along, that Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, in these instances, says you are toleh ketem beketem, against what Rabbi Yehuda bar Levi said. So how do we reconcile that? So I'm Ravina lokasha achi kamar. This is what it means. Hishila chalukah lenachrit balat ketem. If you lent out your chalukah to a nachrit who has a stain, she's already had a sighting with the stain in it, then you can assign the liability to that nachrit. The first answer by Ravina is that it's the same woman. It's a nachrit who's yoshevet al ketem. Now that is somewhat difficult, as we already pointed out, Bali Tosafot said this a couple of daf ago, that even though the Chachamim were gozer tum'ah nida on a nachrit, they were not gozer tumat ketamim by a nachrit. So then how can you call it a nachrit, hayushevet ala ketem? What does that matter? Tamim by a nachrit are not meaningful at all. And so then how could you even make this a statement that we're going to assign the liability? Rashi solves that problem by saying that balat ketem doesn't mean that she had a ketem before. Rather, balat ketem is now the woman who we are going to assign the ketem to. And therefore, it's a nachrit, period. Now she's a balat ketem because we are going to assign that liability to her because it doesn't have any detrimental impact on her. Or you can say that balat ketem means, like we required on the previous daf, that it has to be a woman who's already reached the point of menstruation. Maybe you don't have to actually have a sighting of dam. Even a sighting of a ketem would already bring her into the world of menstruation. And therefore we can assign the liability to her. And that might be the explanation of nachrit balat ketem over here. Where it says, Vaha ol liyoshevet ala ketem tani. That's a nice way to explain it. But you conflated two individuals that were found in the Braita. The Braita had, Hishila chalukah lenachrit ol liyoshevet ala ketem. Nachrit and Yoshevet al Ketem are two separate entities. There's an O in between them in the Braita. Now you're telling me they're all one woman. It's a Nachrit who saw a Ketem. That's not what the Braita says. Where it says, Achi Kamar, Ola Yoshevet al-Dam Tohar, Balat Ketem Tolaba. The two people in the Braita are either a Nachrit, oh, we can always assign liability to because it's not detrimental to her, or it's a woman who has Dam Tohar. She's a woman who gave birth, and now is in her Yemei Tohar. Said before, we assign the liability to her, or the ketem to her, because it's not to her detriment. Because no matter what she sees during that period of time, she will not be tmei'ah, and therefore it makes sense to assign that liability to her. Next part of the Mishnah we're explaining is shalosh shalavshu. three women who wore the same tunic, we said that they all are to Me'im because we can't assign the liability to one more than the other. Then we had Reb Nechemia with regards to the Davar HaMikabel Tuma. Amar Rav Matna, my time with the Reb Nechemia. What's the reasoning behind Reb Nechemia's position? Dichtiv, the Pasuk in Yeshayahu says, Ba'anu v'avlu pitachea v'nikata la'aretz teshev, that the gates shall mourn and lament, v'nikata, and shall be emptied out, la'aretz teshev, she will sit on the ground. Kevin sh'yashva la'aretz nikta. Once she sat on the ground, she is considered to be Torah. Obviously, it's not the literal reading of the Pasuk. Gemara is reading this as, where she sits on the ground, she will be Naki, or Tehorah, meaning that something where there's a stain found on the Aretz, where she sat, Nikita, she'll be considered to be Tehorah. That means that if there's a Ketem, a stain found on the ground, then we do not assume that the woman is Tmeah. And Rabbi Nechemia's reasoning being that the ground is not Mikabel Tuma, and that's the source for his position. Rabbonam Rabbi Chanina, Mitahera ya Rabbi Nechemia, Afilu Bachorei Kli Cheres. On the outer side of a Kli Cheres, if there's a sighting of a Ketem there, then Rabbi Nechemia believes that this woman is Torah. Where it says, Pshita, why would you think otherwise? It's the outside of a Kli Cheres is not Mikabel Tuma. Kli Cheres on Mikabel Tuma mitocho, on the inside, the internal side. The external side is not Mikabel Tuma. So Rabbi Nechemia made a statement. If it's not Mikabel Tuma, there is no Ketem. And all you're saying is the same thing. Well, if you find a Ketem on the outside of a Kli Cheres, there is no Tuma. That's exactly what he said. Why are you telling me that? Ma'od Tema, I would have thought the Gzor Gabo Atu Tocho, maybe we should be Gozer, the outer side, Atu the inner side, and say, well, if she saw it on the inside, the stain, she would be Tmeya. So maybe on the outside we should say the same thing. Kamash Malan, that we don't say that. Amar Abaye, Mitairaya Rabbi Nechemia, Bimatlaniot, Shein Ben Shalosh Al Shalosh. Nechemia also was Mitaher, if you have a piece of cloth that's less than 3 by 3 etzbaot, Velo Chazin, Lo Le'anim, Velo Le'ashimim, because it's no longer useful, not for poor people, not for rich people. In terms of Bigadim, there are certain minimum Shi'urim for a Beged to be Mikabel Tuma. The start of a Beged, it's got to be 3 by 3 Tfachim. If it is a patch for a Beged, it can be 3 by 3 as both. Now there happens to be a difference between wealthy and poor people, because poor people will save more things and use them. They'll tend to patch a Beged, whereas a richer person will not do that. They'll just throw it out or get a new Beged. So the threshold size of a Beged, when you're speaking about an Ani, is smaller. And that's because the Ani is going to have, you get utility out of this. So that minimum shiur is 3 by 3 as both. And it seems to be, it has to be in the shape of a square so that it's useful. Because if it's 9 square etzbaot in a long strip, it may not be useful. It's useful when it's a square. Because if you can use it as a patch, you can use it to cover over something. And that's why we say that it has tuma. Below that threshold, there is no tuma. So now, Bai is saying that Rabbi Nechemia says, if you see a ketem, a stain, on a piece of clothing less than 3 by 3 etzbaot, then there is no din of ketem. Once again, seems to be pshita, even though the Gemara doesn't say pshita over here, because it's something that doesn't meet the threshold to be mekabel tuma. If it can't be mekabel tuma, that's exactly where Nechemia said that not being mekabel tuma is not a ketem. Tosfot says, v'achalo parich pshita. How come here it doesn't say pshita? The reason being is, v'choshiv alayu v'yichta mekablim tuma. That is because even if you have something less than 3 by 3 that's both, if you assign utility to it, you assume you're going to use it, or you keep it because you have some reason for it, then you can lower the threshold from which something becomes tuma, and this beged that's below that threshold will then still have the ability to mekabel tuma. And that's why it's a chiddush over here. It's because when it's less than 3 by 3 as both, you're right, by default, it is not a beged that's mekabel tuma. But if you are machshivit, it would have the ability to be mekabel tuma. Despite that, we do not assume that a ketem that lands on it makes the woman into a nida. Dorosh Rav Chiya Barav Matno Mishmei Derav Halocha Kireb Nechemia. He says over in the name of Rav that the halocha is like Reb Nechemia. Amalei Rav Nachman Abo Tani. We have a braita. Mase ba lifnei chachamim. There was an incident that came before the chachamim. Vitim And the chachamim were mitemei them. Va'at amart halocha kireb Nechemia. And now you're going to tell me the halacha is like Rabbi Nechemia. Here you have a Maisa that came to the Chachamim, and obviously the incident is an incident where it was on an item that was not Mekabel Tumah, and yet the Chachamim said it was Tamei. Well, the Chachamim would only say it's Tamei if they felt that the Halacha was not like Rabbi Nechemiah. So how can you tell me that the Halacha is like Rabbi Nechemiah? Mahi? So what's this incident? The Tanya, we have a brayta, shtei nashim sheyu tochanot v'rechayim shel yad. You have two women that are working on a handmill. Nimsa dam tachat apnimit. If under the first woman, the one who's closer to the mill, you find a stain, shtehem tmeot. Both of them are considered to be tmeot. Tachat achitzona, if you find dam underneath the woman who is on the outer side, meaning there's a woman between her and the mill, achitzona tmeya. Then the outer one is tmeya, vapnimit, tehora. And the inner one is tehora. Bentayim, if there's a stain that's found between the two of them, then shtehem tmeot. Then since it's equally possible that it came from either one of them, then they are both tmeot. It seems to be here that the issue is how the women work together on the mill. The outer woman who's helping the inner woman work the handmill, it does it in a way by pushing up against her, the woman's on the inside, in order to help her move the mill, in order to help her push the mill. So the fact that she leans onto her or pushes on her means that even if the inner woman has something below her, it could have been sourced out of the outer woman because she's putting pressure on her or coming up close to her. On the other hand, if it's found by the outer woman, the inner woman is not falling back or coming away from the mill. She's pushing in towards the mill. So therefore, we would assign the liability there to the outer woman, not the inner woman. If it's found between them, then it's equally plausible that it came from either one of them. So Hayah Maaseh, the Ragra takes out the word Hayah. There was another incident. The name said Dam al Sfatah Shel Embati, and they found blood on the edge of the bathtub. Or on a leaf, an olive leaf, at the time that they were firing up the tanur. And in all these instances, the chachamim were asked what the halacha was, and they were mitameh them. Now obviously, aleh shel zayit is an item that's not mikabel tumah, and yet they're saying tameh against that position of Rabbi Nechemiah. So it seems like the chachamim followed the position of the Tanakam or the Chachamim that disagree with Rabbi Nechemiah, and how are you saying that the halacha is like Rabbi Nechemiah? It says, Tanaihi, it's actually machloket Tanaim, Titanya, Rabbi Yaakov mitameh, Rabbi Nechemiah mitaher. But it's a machloket of Yechidim. You have Rabbi Yaakov, who is mitameh in cases where it's on something that is not mekabel tumah, and Rabbi Nechemiah was mitaher. Behold, Chachamim, ki Rabbi Nechemiah, and the Chachamim paskin like Rabbi Nechemiah. So all those positions before that we saw that were said in the name of the Rabbonon, or Chachamim Tim'um, those Chachamim are not really multiple people. Those Chachamim are a Dat Yachid of Rabbi Yaakov. And since it's a Dat Yachid of Rabbi Yaakov, then that doesn't carry weight to the point where we would say that that undermines the view that the Halacha is like Rabbi Nechemiah. The Halacha is like Rabbi Nechemiah. Those say that they're following this position of the Chachamim and those Braitot, that's not really Chachamim, that's Rabbi Yaakov. And if Rabbi Yaakov is a dat yachid, then there's no problem passing like Rabbi Nechemiah as a dat yachid, if that seems to be the better of the two positions. Shlosh nashim sheyu shenot b'mitachat. Three women sleeping in a single bed. V'ninsa dam takar achat mehem. And there's a stain under one of them. Kulan tmeot. All of them are tmeot. Obviously, we assume that the women move around in the bed, and therefore, just because it's below one woman, doesn't mean that the other woman didn't roll over. It wasn't in that spot during the night. And since we cannot assign liability to any particular woman, that wouldn't be to her detriment. It turns out to be the detriment of all of them. And therefore, we reach a fake. We say that they are all tmeot. And even though generally when we have a multiple of people, three, we already deem it to be safek tumah bishut rabim, and therefore we should go the kula and not the chumra over here. Nevertheless, we don't deem it to be safek tumah bishut rabim, either because the women are sleeping over here, and therefore it doesn't have a status like Rishut Rabim, or because there's a difference between dam that comes from an external factor, and then there's a safek tumah, versus dam that issue is from the women themselves, whereby it's almost an internal issue or factor, and there we do not have this principle of safek tumah, Rishut Rabim, or it's likely because in this case you can't invoke safek tumah Rishut Rabim, because all these women are coming together to ask us a question, And we have to assign liability of the dam that's found there to one of the women. And since we have no reason to believe that one of these women, any more than the other, is the one who's the source of the dam, we have to make them all tameim, because to make them all teorim would be a contradiction to the sighting of the dam that's found in the bed, where you have to figure out, at least to pin that liability on someone, because you have to assume that the source of that dam came from one of these women. But ka'achat me'am v'nim seit tameah, one of them does a check and sees that she is menstruating. Then we assume that she is the source for the ketem, and the other two women are torot. Bitolot zo bizo. And they have the ability to assign liability to another party. Seems to be extraneous or unnecessary. And the Gemara will explain why the Mishnah said this. Vim lo ayu ri'uim lirot. If these women should not be, or don't expect to be seeing dam, then ro'im otam kilen ru'uyot. Then we look at them as if all of them have the possibility of having a sighting of dam. So for instance, and the Gemara will point this out as well, if you have three women that are pregnant, that are sleeping in a bed together, none of those women are expecting to sing dam because they are musuleket damim. But since all of them have that same standing, they are no better off than a case where you have three regular women in a bed, and you have the stain, and you have to determine who is the source of the stain. We say all of them, because we don't have a better reason to assign it to one of the women out of the three. Similarly here, when all three women are pregnant, there's no reason to assign it to one woman over the other two women. And therefore, they all are of the same standing, and we're going to assume all of them are the problem here, and they all be tmeot, even though they're all misuleket damim. But because we can't determine who is the source for it, we assume that they are all the source for it. Amar Rav Yehuda Marav. That fact that we say that we assume that the woman who finds herself tmeah is the source of the ketem, and thereby the other two women are torim, that's only if she checks it b'shur veset. So if it is b'shur veset, the amount of time it takes for her to grab the cloth and do a quick check, as Tosfot says, not a deep check, but just a kinuach, then we will assign the liability to this woman, because we will assume that the dam she saw now was connected to the dam or the ketem that's on the bed. And our assumption in this case is because the check was done proximate enough that if she finds herself to Me'ah now, and finds herself to be a Nida, then she was already a Nida on the bed, and therefore the stain on the bed is sourced from her. But, seemingly, if she had tarried more time, or waited more time, we would not say that, because there's then enough of a gap of a time between the time she left the bed and she did the check for her to have a sighting. The sighting could have happened after she left the bed. And since that's the case, we can't assign the liability to her, because we don't know that it really was coming from her. We can't assume it came from her. Savala ki bar palda. It's clear that he holds like bar palda. Damar kol shibala b'chatat tehorotah tmeot. Any woman who, if her husband was together with her at that time, would be chayav chatat for boel nida, then any tehorot that she was involved with are tmeot. So similarly, by the case of bala, she does a check in that short amount of time, then we will assume that the dam that came now, or that we're seeing now, was there at the time of the bi'ah, because of the short proximity between the time of the bi'ah and now the sighting of the dam. On the other hand, if it is longer than a shir veset, the amount of time it takes for her to get off the bed and do a kinuach and then do a check, so that's a little more time, a little more tarrying. Already there, you are maleh safek. There's at least some safek as to whether the dam came afterwards or happened during the bi'ah. There, balaba sham taloi. For husband is bringing a korban ala safek because we're not certain as to whether he was boel nida or not. Then tarotah tluyot. The tarot that she worked with are tluyot. They have a safek tuma. If it's any longer than that period of time, bala patur. Her husband doesn't have to bring a korban at all. Then bala has no liability as patur the gamre because there's enough window of time where we in all likelihood would assign the appearance of the dam or the signing of the dam at this point to happening after the bi'ah was already complete. Then tarotah teorot. Then her tarot are considered to be tarot, meaning that there is a correlation between the liability of the husband of being a bol nida and the tum'ah of the tarot. And that is based on how long it takes her to do the check. If she does the check et yom, immediately, meaning that she has the cloth in hand and she checks immediately after the bi'ah, and finds dam on that aid from that bidika, then we will say that the husband is badai, has to bring a korban chatat, because there's no question that she had the sighting while they were having intercourse, and therefore he was a bol nida. Similarly, any Torah that she was involved with are tmeot. If it is that right after she finished the biyah, she gets off the bed and does a check, in that case, if she had enough time to get off the bed, we are not certain then whether the dam happened before she left the bed or after she left the bed. And therefore, if the husband brings it, Basham Taloi, and if she sees this sighting in the gap of time that is the same as getting off the bed and doing a check, then the tarot are also tumeot misafek. If it is beyond that time period, she waited longer, then in that case, the husband does not bring a korban at all, because it's too far removed from the act of the biyah to the point where it's very plausible that it happened after the biyah was over already. Therefore, he has no liability here. And the tarot, we will assume, are tehorot. Rashi says over here in the Balei Tosfot, add on to that, that of course, Bar Poda must believe over here that there is either no tumah l'mafreya, like Shammai HaZaken in the first Mishnah in the Masechta, or the woman here is one of the four women who is Mesuleket Damim, or it's a woman who has a fixed cycle who does not have tumah l'mafreya, doesn't have retroactive tumah. Because otherwise, even if you found it after the period of time, that was a longer period to check, where Baalah would be Torah, the Tarot would still be Tmeot, not because of the sighting now, but because of the Mafreya. The sighting now causes Tumah L'Mafreya. So where is that Tumah L'Mafreya? So these are all possibilities of why there is no Tumah L'Mafreya over here, either because Bar Poda holds like Shammai, or it's one of the four women that's Mesuleket Damim, or it's a woman who has a fixed Veset where we don't assign her Tumah L'Mafreya. So Bar Poda correlates between the biyah and the liability of the man to the status of the tarot. Then Rav Hoshaya says that afilu ba'ala b'chatat tarotei tluyot. Even if the husband has absolute liability over here, the tarot are still tluyot. And the reason Rav Hoshaya differentiates between the case of ba'ala and the tarot is because there's a big difference in the cases. In the case of biyah, there's a reason to believe that the dam was there already, but was held back from issuing forth or being discharged because of the bi'ah itself. And that's what he says. Bishlam al-tamimer shamash tekve the dam. The member, the cohabitating, caused the dam to be stopped from flowing out. Bahocha, im ita, over here by the tarot, that the dam was there, the ita avidam, manakve. There's nothing stopping it or plugging it. It should have come out immediately. So there is reason to differentiate between these cases and to say by the case of bi'ah, there's a reason that there was a delay in the issuance of the dam. By the case of tarot, there's no reason for a delay. And if it's delayed, it probably means there's no association between them. Or at least there's a safek to the association between them. The Balei HaTosafot say, if there's any safek over here, why is it that we force the husband to bring a korban in that case? According to Rav Hoshaya, then in the case of tarot, we say it's a safek, then by bi'ilah, even though there's reason to believe that the shamash is akvei, that's still a supposition. And why would you allow a person to bring a chatat, vadai, in that situation? But those what answers, you have to say that rov pamim, it makes sense that the dam came earlier and the tashmish withheld it. Plus, the fact that you cited so closely after the bi'ah, in all likelihood, indicates that it was there during the bi'ah. And since we have that seemingly overwhelming evidence, we're going to treat it like a vadai, even though there is a slight safek that still remains, that makes it that Rav Hoshaya believes that by tarot, they're still considered to be tluyot, and not tmeot vadait. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, mashal de Rabbi Hoshaya lema davar domeh. Rav Hoshaya's explanation, what is a good parable to explain it? Le'yelid v'zakein sheyuma alchei mederech. You have a young man and an older person walking or traveling some distance. As long as they're out in the fields, they're on their way, the younger person walks more slowly to allow the older person to keep pace with them. Nichnesu the year, once they enter in the city, and the old person can find his home and go home, and the young person can run his way, then all of a sudden the young person picks up the pace, because now he's not encumbered by the old person walking with him, and he takes off. So that's the same thing over here with regards to the bi'ah, where Rav Hoshaya says, by bi'ah, the shamash, the member, causes a delay in the release of the dam. As soon as you take away that ma'akev, you take away that stopper, then the blood starts to flow. Similar to the young man and the older person. As soon as you take away the fact that he's got to wait for the older person, he takes off. He picks up the pace. So too here the dam. As soon as the shamash was out, the dam picked up the pace and came out of the woman. That would be the mashal. V'amar abayi mashal d'rabo shayah d'amad d'avad d'umeh. Gives a different parable. The dam shenotein etzva ba'ayin. Person puts his finger into his eye. As long as the finger is in the eye, irritating the eye doesn't tear at that point because it's being irritated right then. About Natala Etzba, once you take your finger out, Dim'a Maheret Labo. All of a sudden the eye starts to tear up and all this moisture starts to build around the eye because of the irritation that is there. So while the irritant is in the eye, the person is not tearing. So as you remove the finger, which was irritated, it leaves the eye irritated, and then it starts to tear. So the same thing here. As long as the shamash was in there, then the dam didn't come. As soon as the shamash left, then all of a sudden the dam came pouring out. So the same idea here in both all these cases, which is that the reasoning by Rabbi Shaya is that you have to distinguish between bia and tarot. Bia, there is something that causes the tearing of the dam, and therefore when the dam comes out later, I would assume that it was the shamash that was me'akevet. But here, in the case of Tarot, there's nothing holding it back. And if she was going to cite the dam, she would have cited in a timely fashion, not in a delayed fashion. Tolod zo b'zo, the women in the bed can assign liability to each other. Tarabanan, ketzat tolod zo b'zo. What exactly is that scenario in the Mishnah? It seems to be a duplicate of what we said earlier in the Mishnah. Ubra, mishena ubra. If you have a woman who's pregnant and a woman that's not pregnant, tola ubra b'she'ena ubra, then the one who's pregnant can assign the liability to the one who's not pregnant. The one who's pregnant is mesuleket damim. She has a chazaka that she's not going to have a setting of dam. And there was a woman in there who was not pregnant, then in all likelihood, or the higher probability, is it's the woman who is not pregnant that's the source. So the pregnant woman can assign that liability to her. Minikav she'ena minikav. The woman's nursing and not nursing. Tola minikav, shena minikav. The one who's nursing can't assign the liability to the one who's not nursing. Because again, a nursing woman is a misuleket damim. Given that, she can assign the liability to the one who's not minikav. Zekeinav, shena zekeinav. A woman who's reached menopause and another woman who has not reached menopause. Tola zekeinav, shena zekeinav. Again, the menopausal woman can't assign the liability to the woman who still hasn't reached menopause because, again, it's more likely, the higher probability is that she's the source of the dam over here. Betula, v'she'ena betula. A woman who is a betula, and here, betula does not mean a woman who has yet to have bia. Betula means a woman has yet to get her menstrual cycle, and a woman who has already reached her menstrual cycle. Betula, betula, v'she'ena betula. The woman who has yet to have her menstrual cycle can assign the liability to the one who's already had her menstrual cycle. The real over here limits this to women who are really misuleket tamim. But you cannot have a situation where you have a woman who has a fixed veset and a woman who does not have a fixed veset. The one with the fixed veset can't assign it to the one without a fixed veset. And even more so, he says, even a woman who have both have fixed veset, and one of them is at the time where she would be seeing, and the other one is not at the time she would be seeing, the one who's not at the time she would be seeing can't assign that liability to the woman who is at the time that she would be seeing. When we say over here, tolin, it's dafka in these situations or scenarios that the Gemara lays out that are women who are really misuleket damim. Yushteim ubrot, shteim minikot. What happens if they are both, or even if three of them are all pregnant? Oh, two of them or three of them are all nursing. Shteim zkenot. Or they are both already menopausal. Shteim bitulot. They're both not at an age yet where they would have a menstrual cycle, or they haven't had a menstrual cycle. Zoi shishaninu. That's the latter line in the Mishnah. That's the end of the Mishnah. None of them are expected to have sightings of dam because they have a cheskat tara. They are misuleket damim. Then roim kilu en riuyot. We look at them all as if they have the capacity to see dam, and therefore we're going to assign liability to all of them, and all of them will be tmeiot in that case, even though each one of them individually is misuleket damim. Nevertheless, when they're all together, we can't assign liability more likely to one over the other, and therefore they all are tmeiot in that case. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Samach Aleph, Amud Aleph.